Welcome to Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self. I am Chris Burns, America's number one motivational speaker for fiery inspiration and GPS coach for entrepreneurs and high achievers. Each episode, we interview leaders and great role models who make a massive impact in the world to help you master yourself, take courageous action, and make every day your best day ever. Talk about the sponsored message, and it is by Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self in the 21-Day Challenge. If you're an entrepreneur or high achiever, you're feeling stuck, overwhelmed, lost, or just not truly tapped into your power, the 21-Day Challenge is here to reignite you, reignite your self-belief and passion so you can succeed like never before. You'll get crystal clear on your long-term goals. You'll be able to break those down into bite-sized steps so that you can have a daily plan of success and achievement, and then I will hold you accountable to that for 21 days. That's the 21-Day Challenge. And it is a three-week program. If you want to know more, send me a message, chris@beyourgps.com, or find me on Facebook and message me there. Looking forward to hearing from you. Next up is the iTunes review of the week. And this week, it is by, let's see who it's by. I believe it's Queen Sawyer. Queen Sawyer says, love this podcast. Every single episode is filled with great advice and actions to take. I love it. Queen, thank you so much. And if you want to give us a review, go to beyourgps.com/iTunes, and you can give us a review there or search Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self on the iTunes store, and you'll find us like that. Thank you so much in advance for doing that and letting us know what you love about the show, what you want to see more of, and what we could use improvement on. Thanks so much. Now, let's introduce Gabby. She's going to be coming on and rocking the house. Make sure you stick through all the way till the end of the interview, because she's going to share the gold. She's going to empower you, inspire you, and uplift you to be your greatest possible self. So you definitely want to stay tuned. Let's introduce her, and then we'll bring her on. Gabrielle Burton is a licensed marriage and family therapist intern and works with families, individuals, and couples. She specializes in working with creative teens and young adults. Gabrielle enjoys combining her love for art and therapy, as she is a singer, writer, and public speaker. She calls herself a gold digger because she believes everyone has hidden treasures within, and she won't stop helping her clients dig for the wealth they possess. Gabrielle, you ready to rock this?
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are. You're now rocking it live on Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self. Thank you so much for being here and showing up to be your GPS and help us do the same with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. So we're going to dive right into the theme of the day, which today is clarity equals power. So Gabrielle, how does this concept, this principle of clarity equals power, how does that shape and impact you in your life? And what does that mean to you?
Yeah, such a great question. Clarity equals power. I love that, because I feel like if we don't really have a good idea or vision of where we're headed, it's really hard to take the appropriate steps to move towards whatever goals you have. So being able to really clarify and get just really good 2020 vision on what it is that you want to do is going to help you move towards where you're headed.
Amen. So it's like, really, if you want to get to where you want to go, you got to have clarity first. I 100% agree, Gabby. That's awesome. So tell us a little bit more about what you do. I mentioned it in the intro, but in your own words, what do your clients come to you for, and how do you serve the world?
Absolutely. So like you said, I'm a marriage and family therapist intern. So I got my master's in 2016, and I've been seeing clients ever since. Okay. And basically, my approach is systemic. So if someone were to come in and say, I have anxiety or depression, I'm going to look at that. I'm going to look at their family of origin. I'm going to look at like their socioeconomic status. I'm going to look at, you know, their race, their religion. There's a lot of different things that actually make up a person that could be contributing to the things that they are experiencing. So I'm able to kind of get a better picture of knowing more about their background and their history, so that I can then put better picture together to see what is really causing them a lot of stress, or the symptoms that they're coming into the office for. I work with a lot of teens and young adults. A lot of them are creatives, and I myself am very creative. I notice that creatives tend to feel deeper than people that don't necessarily consider themselves creatives. And so I generally will find a creative outlet for my clients. And so just because sometimes words don't always come naturally. So, or talk therapy may not always be as natural for some of my clients. So I'll ask them to maybe write a poem or write a story or pick a monologue that really tells me how they're feeling. And then we can kind of identify the emotions. So I do a lot of like out of the box, we call it like experiential therapy.
That's awesome.
Type of approaches. But, a lot of times my clients love it because it doesn't always feel like, oh, and how does that make you feel? You know, it's a lot of fun for them.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's so cool. And I love how you have a solution that is creative in itself, and not a lot of people are used to that. You know, it's like you have this out of the box way of approaching a challenge or a problem or someone's pain or you know, suffering or thing that they're dealing with, and you're able to give them a voice. You're able to empower them and uplift them through that. So Gabby, that's super awesome. And I want to know, how did you get to being this, you know, marriage and family therapist and working with these teens? What was that process in your own journey like to get to where we are today?
Yeah. Oh, such a great question. Well, it's so funny. Okay. When I was a little girl, I asked questions all the time. And I thought a little girl, I thought I was going to be a reporter because I was such a curious kid. And as a therapist, I am kind of like, you know, a reporter in the sense that I'm asking all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
But growing up, my mom was an on and off single mom. So she raised four kids by herself, and we moved around a lot. So I would say that my childhood was pretty unstable. And then when I was 15, I moved in with my dad, who has some mental health issues, and he was mentally, spiritually, and emotionally abusive. And so I didn't know that while I was living with him, but he was very, very controlling in a lot of ways. And it wasn't until I went to college where I ended up, experiencing a lot of symptoms that were like debilitating to me. I wasn't able to get out of bed. I wasn't eating. I was sleeping. I would shake uncontrollably. So I found myself, going in and out of the hospital for like 2.5 months, just trying to figure out what was going on with me. And that was when I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And I didn't think they completely understood what I was trying to tell them, because I literally felt like I was dying. Like just the symptoms that I had going on. I would have like these weird like zaps like all over my body and like stomach issues. I mean, it was just, I was seriously thinking I was going to be diagnosed with some type of incurable disease because these symptoms were so debilitating. And so it was like during that process that I actually started to realize that it wasn't just a matter of, because the doctors wanted to medicate it away. I would go to my pastors and they wanted to pray it away. It was a spiritual attack. I would go to my nutritionist and they just wanted to get me to eat because I wasn't really eating. And it was a combination of everything. And so at that point, it was like a turning point in my life where I actually realized the importance of taking care of my health. And I had to change my relationship with food as well. Because during that time, I was like diagnosed with what's called orthorexia, which is where you eat only the same five things over and over and over again. And so I had to learn, I actually learned that I had what was called acid reflux or GERD. And so the reason why I ate only five things was because everything else made my stomach mad. So I had to learn about my body. I had to learn about how food is good for me and really adjust my diet, but also make sure that I'm giving my body the nutrients that it needs. I had to implement exercise. I had to implement meditation and just kind of really overall living like a healthier lifestyle. And that was really what made me realize like, wow, this makes all the difference. And if I can help clients be able to do the same thing I've done for myself, then my journey and my story was so worth it.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I'm sure even in those moments of like, man, what is going on with my body? It's like that confusion, the unknown of what is it, you know, what is happening? Like, how is this like affecting me? What is going on? And if you don't have those answers, it can be really frustrating and debilitating and like, man, like, I don't get it. And to keep, you know, going to the hospital and seeing all these different experts and you know, people who are supposed to be helping, and they all think it's their own solution, their own, you know, expertise that's going to make the difference. It's like hearing all the different conflicting advice that had to have been challenging for you to listen to yourself and like trust yourself and know like what is your own path of healing and wellness when you're being bombarded with all these other people's outside opinions.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think, you know, from that process, it kind of helped me understand that no one person has the whole answer. And it's like no one discipline, you know, knows all the answers. And so it's important that we really look at different disciplines and understand what their area of expertise is, but also for us to really work together. I recently was working with a client, and things that like, it kind of like made me really sad, because the things that she was going through, is what the pharmacist wanted to just keep her on medications, or the psychiatrist on medications. And for the longest time, just seeing her process of being on meds and it not, her not getting any better, but getting worse, it was really like stressful and sad to see her go through this process. And recently we found out that it wasn't even what she thought she had. It was actually adrenal fatigue, which completely managed by just her food and her diet and other things. And so it's just really interesting to see that, you know, it's important to get second and third opinions. It's important to really approach our health holistically.
That's what I heard, like the holistic view, because there's in the movie the Doctor Strange, I don't know if you've seen it, it's a great Marvel movie, but the guy, the superhero, goes to a Nepal, Kathmandu, and he seeks out this like this trainer, this master, right? And so the master shows him, hey, have you ever seen this before? And she shows him an x-ray, and then he's like, oh, what is that, an x-ray? And then she says, have you ever seen this before? And then she shows him an MRI scan, right? And then she shows him, hey, have you ever seen this before? And it's the chakras of the body, right? And it's like all these pieces, when we put them together, then we get the holistic view to be able to have awareness and guide our lives at the highest level of success and fulfillment. With pieces of the puzzle missing, if we don't understand, whether we don't know or we just don't go seek that help and that guidance, which is, you know, why your clients come to you if they're looking for guidance, if they're looking to, you know, free themselves of emotional pain or prison that they feel like trapped in or whatever they're going through, then, you know, that's really what this world is all about. Like, we all have our own gifts to give to people, and your gifts of curiosity and sharing your own journey and being able to relate with people are yours. And that's why, you know, you're building a profession and a brand and the ability to impact people in a big way because of who you are and the experience that you've gained. And I think it's just so awesome that everyone has their own perspective, and like, you are amazing at meeting people where they're at, whatever their self-expression is, you give them the tools and the outlets to help them do that.
Thank you for saying that.
You're welcome.
That you are incredibly gifted. Every time I speak to you and to Petia, you're both just so incredibly encouraging. Like the other day when I talked to you, I was like fired up. I was like, oh my goodness, I feel so inspired and so you're ready to take on life. Let's do this.
And that's what you do for other people in a different way. You give them access to possibility, you know, you give them access to hope, to peace, to, well, maybe there is something, a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that's super awesome. So let's start diving into this concept of the wealthiness of healthiness. Like, where did you come up with that? And how did you create that relationship in your mind and in your profession?
It's actually kind of a huge concept of what I'm writing in my book. I've been writing for 2 years and that in itself is a process. Thought I was going to have it ready last year, and I just really feel like it's not ready to be released yet. There's still some massaging out, but, kind of the premise of the book talks about how, in 1848, there was the gold rush that happened, and it was in the city that we now know as San Francisco. But it gave people the opportunity to create a new life. It brought people from all over the world to come and hopefully find this wealth that was going to really change their lives around. And it created a multi-ethnic and multicultural society because people came from all over the world thinking they're going to find this wealth.
Right.
So it's kind of like they're on this huge treasure hunt. And, but the thing was, is not everybody ended up striking it rich. I mean, there were some people, but you know, there were a lot of people that really took that huge risk and they didn't end up finding what they were looking for. So they maybe went back empty handed. And there was a lot of, just like violence that went on during that time. And so it wasn't like, it wasn't like a great story. Sorry about that.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
But yeah, so I mean, there, you know, so there was a lot of turmoil that actually went down during that time. And so it kind of got me thinking about how in our Declaration of Independence, it says everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think of like the pursuit of happiness is people, you know, looking for the gold, looking for like physical gold, or for if I just acquire more money, if I just get the right job, if I just get into a relationship, or if I just have the kids, or if I'm just single and, you know, divorced, like, you know, people are always looking for what they don't have. And that really is what is creating this, you know, lots of mental health issues for people, like anxiety and depression, because we're thinking that if we just have something that we don't have, our lives will be different. So like the wealthiness of healthiness is really looking for the value that you actually already have and seeing how that really does increase your life and your relationships. I think of the currency that we have are the relationships that we have in our lives. It's the health that we have, you know, and nurturing our health, because honestly, let's think about it. If you have all the money in the world, but you're sick, like what good is that going to do? Right. Or if you have all the money in the world, but you're, you know, working your life away and you never have time to be with your loved ones, is that really, you know, the life you want to live? And so really it's about finding the value in the season that you're in and the, you know, the relationships and, the tools that you already have now, and how can you really make sure that you are enhancing that season that you're in?
Yeah, it's powerful. Where do you think people can become aware? How do they become aware of when they are feeling lack or feeling like it's something outside of them? It's something that they don't have. You know, how can they become aware that that's going on, that that's running the show, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, something that I use in therapy a lot is, it's an acronym called HALT. So it says, be aware of making decisions when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Those are the times when we probably make some of the most impulsive and unhealthy decisions. When you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And so we kind of have to really think about internally, like, okay, what am I feeling right now? What is my emotional state right now? I wish I had it, but I usually use with my clients on a huge emotional wheel. And a lot of times people think that the main emotions you think about are like happy, sad, mad, angry, but there's like probably 45, 50 different emotions on that emotional wheel. And we have to be able to acknowledge like, okay, actually right now I'm feeling a little, I'm feeling a little disrespected by what you said. And, or I'm feeling alienated, or, you know, and identifying your emotion. So that way you don't allow that emotion to drive your actions. You have to acknowledge it. And then you have to say, okay, is this emotion true? Should I be feeling this right now? Is that what that person meant to make me feel? And then you're able to sit back and make a better choice. I always say, you know, if there, when there's a fire, you know, we call first responders. Could you imagine if they were first reactors and they showed up on the scene and they're like, oh, it's hot, I don't know what to do. And oh my gosh, is that person safe? Like their job is to keep the atmosphere calm, right? They're the professionals. But if they were reacting to everything, I wouldn't feel very safe. And so I believe that we all need to learn how to be first responders as well in any type of situation. So that, but before we do that, we have to become emotionally intelligent of how we're feeling.
That's powerful. So the first responder versus first reactor, responding is coming from a place of responsibility, from power, from calm, from peace, from keeping a level head, versus react is just like reacting, just doing the same action over and over again. It's like the habitual pattern loop that just keeps normally playing out. And a lot of people are not trained to handle their situations with calmness, with centeredness. They're typically, you know, reacting in scarcity, in fear, in overwhelm, in anxiety, and all these different feelings and emotions. And I also love what you said about like being able to identify what the emotion is. If we can identify that emotion, then we have power over it. It doesn't have power over us. If we can name it, then we can claim it, right? It's like if we name, hey, this is what I'm feeling, sad, depressed, lonely, whatever it might be, and that's not what I want. And I don't want that to run me anymore. I want to choose happiness. I want to choose gratitude. I want to choose appreciation. So I'm going to give up my depression or loneliness or anger or whatever it might be, and then I'm going to experience more happiness right now. And how can I experience more happiness right now? And being curious about that is what will lead to people taking actions that generate more happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, so the happiness thing, and I'm still kind of on the fence about it. So, yeah. You know, but sometimes I think about happiness and I think about, there was a doctor, I'm going to butcher his name right now. I write about it in my book. But he studied happiness, and he talks about how each person has a genetic set point of happiness that we're born with. So it's kind of like, if you think about like, okay, let's think about your resting heart rate. You know, everybody has their normal resting heart rate that it, you know, that's its normal heart rate. But when you're working out, it needs to, you know, you've got to get your maximum heart rate. You got to get your heart rate going so that way you can actually do the most of your workout, but then it returns back to that normal, you know, resting heart rate. That's what he talks about in regards to the set point and happiness, genetic set point. And he says that about 40% of our happiness is actually genetically determined, which I thought was really interesting because it also kind of reminds me of like serotonin levels that we have in our brain. Some people actually have more serotonin in their brains. And you can increase serotonin by exercise and by certain foods that you eat, but there are just some people have more serotonin in their brains than others. Wow. So there is actually a chemical reaction when it comes to quote unquote happiness. But when I think about joy, joy is a mindset. I think gives us the ability to transcend, you know, difficulties and hardships.
Yeah.
Because it really is saying, you know, I can still find meaning and value in this hardship. But happiness is based on our circumstances. It's based on, oh, this is making me happy right now. Right. And, or, you know, oh, you're making me unhappy, right? So that's kind of like my take on the whole, you know, happiness thing. And just like, you know, it says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We're in a culture where we are always pursuing what makes me feel good, that feel good hormone, which is why we're so addicted. I mean, Brene Brown, she talks about how we are the most addicted, overweight, obese, and in debt cohort in the history, because we don't like these emotions that we're feeling right now. It's human nature to avoid pain and seek pleasure. It just is. And so, but we have to get comfortable with uncomfortability, and we have to realize that, you know, experiencing a quote unquote negative emotion isn't a bad thing. Fear isn't always bad. Like fear is actually a great motivator. So is anger, right? Like anger can lead to action. So we have to not really label emotions as bad or good. They just are. And I think when people start to come to that understanding, then we'll become more emotionally healthy.
So it's like accepting and embracing the emotions, because also emotions are very transient, right? Like it doesn't define us. It's just a state. It's just an experience. And we can use it as a guiding compass to know if we're on track or off track of whatever is important to us. If we're feeling, you know, betrayed or something like that, then we know we're off track of who we want to be around, how we want to feel, how connected we want to be, you know, being trusting. If trust is a big value to us, then we want to like be around people who make us grow in our trust, not take away our trust. So it's like being able to be aware of those emotions as guiding compass, guiding rudder, so to speak, of our life. I think that's another huge perspective shift that a lot of people, you know, they're just asleep to. They just think that they are their emotions. I am sad. I am overwhelmed. And that is who they are. Like, they are attached to their emotions, probably because they get a lot of, like, some kind of satisfaction or payoff off of their emotions. Have you seen that or experienced that, where people, like, identify with their emotions?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think our culture has a lot of learned helplessness. Yeah. You know, kind of like, oh, well, you know, this is just how my life is, or this is just my luck, or, you know, this is how it's always going to be. And that's just really what we call in therapy self-talk, you know, matter of what you say to yourself, your thoughts become behaviors, become actions, you know? Yeah. And so in therapy, we do a lot of what's called cognitive behavioral therapy. It really is just kind of identifying some of those, we call them cognitive distortions, which are self-limiting beliefs, black and white thinking. Black and white thinking is basically all or nothing. I'm either really amazing or I'm horrible. And, you know, and one of my favorite quotes is, you're allowed to be a masterpiece and a work of progress at the same time.
Yeah.
And our culture has to learn how to be able to balance, like, dual realities, you know, because even when it comes to relationships, I know friends that have had a hard time being excited for their friends that are thriving, that are doing awesome things, because in their life is, you know, not where they want it to be.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is that in the same day that someone is giving birth to a child, there's someone that's dying and passing away, you know? And so someone might be getting married and someone else might be going through a breakup or a divorce.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be so many different things that happen simultaneously, and your needs and my needs can exist at the exact same time. And they're valid, you know? But we have to become able to host both realities and be okay with that. I think when it came to the elections, that whole time was like crazy, because people were getting so heated about it and they took it personal. Like, if you don't have the same political view as I do, then unfriend me. And I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because basically what I'm saying is, if you can't validate me and my emotions, then I'm uncomfortable with that. But wow, you're giving away so much power to that other person by, you know, them needing to validate you so much. Like, we can agree to disagree. Maybe I vote this way because I feel so strongly about, you know, immigration, but you vote this way because you feel strongly about LGBTQ rights, you know, and that's okay. But instead of jumping to conclusions, we need to actually start asking more questions and being curious, like staying in a place of curiosity.
Yeah, I love that. I love that curiosity. That was a big theme for me growing up too. And it's evolved also into wonder, right? Like, being in wonder, like, I wonder what this other person is thinking. I wonder how they see the world. I wonder what is the common ground or the solution or the bridge here. And it's like coming from that place of possibility, which is super powerful. And I love how you said, you know, you can be both of those things, a masterpiece and a work in progress at the same time. And also, the thing came up for me is contrast. If someone's unable to handle the contrast of life, like, on one hand, I'm, you know, earning lots of money, and then there's a homeless person on the side of the street, you know, and what do I make that mean? How do I interpret that contrast? Do I make it mean, oh, he's lazy, he deserves that, like, you know, he doesn't, you know, belong in society? Or do I make it mean, hey, you know, he's on his journey, right? Or this person is suffering. I wonder what they're going through. I wonder how they got there and how they see the world, because there's contrast. And how do I interpret and relate to the contrast? And I believe if we were more open to seeing it as contrast rather than good or bad and having judgments on it, there'd be so much more freedom and empowerment for us and love and connection.
I love that. Yes. There's a book that I read called Junkyard Wisdom, and it talks about privilege, which is one of my favorite topics to talk about. I know it's, like, really uncomfortable for people, but I'm like, let's go there.
Because
it is so important. But he talks about how we're always going to experience that contrast and that discomfort. And he's like, and I don't think it should ever go away. Because, you know, when I have that discomfort or I see somebody that's, you know, experiencing homelessness, right. In this season of their life, it really makes me uncomfortable, but it also helps me understand that there's a responsibility in that. If I stay in my comfortability all the time, he asks a great question. He says, whose suffering don't I know about because of the walls of comfort that I've built up?
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, that's like, that is amazing. Because again, as humans, our nature is to avoid pain and seek pleasure. And so I'm going to stay in my little comfortable, you know, environment, and I'm not going to deal with people's mess and people's junk because I'm selfish, you know, and I want to protect myself. But then how am I actually contributing to the world? And I always like to say that what I don't have is hidden in someone else. We were not created or That's equipped good. For everything that we need to be in life because it's not about me. If I could do everything on my own, then it's not really a greater plan. It's just my plan. And so I always think about, you know, being curious and like striking up conversations with other people, because who knows, I could sit down and talk to somebody who actually could be my next business partner, or, you know, they could have words of wisdom that like is exactly what I needed to. Actually, funny story, hilarious story, true story. this happened about maybe a month and a half ago. And I saw this man who was experiencing homelessness on the side of the road. And he had a sign that said, anything helps. He was like, you know, socks, food, you know, anything. And so I had a pair of socks that I was planning on going to the gym later. And they were washed. I had worn them before, but they were washed. And so he said socks. And I was like, well, I have a pair of socks. So I rolled down the window and I said, hi, sir. Like, you know, I see your sign says that you can use anything. I've got a pair of socks. Here you go. And he was so sweet and so kind. And he's just like, oh, thank you so much. I'm like, you're welcome. My car was also on E. And I was planning on going to the gas station on the exit prior to that. But when I went to that exit, like, it was so backed up. So I was like, okay, well, let me get off on this next exit, which is where I met this sir. And as soon as I gave him the socks, I'm not even joking, my car ran out of gas right
in front. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, what are the chances? So I feel like embarrassed, you know, because I'm like, okay, like this is so awkward and so embarrassing, but I actually feel really great that I gave him something.
Yeah.
And he was so sweet because he saw that I was in need. He put his sign down. He goes, how can I help you? Can I go get gas? You know, what can I do for you? If you need to go, I will watch your car, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it was just such a contrast in that moment because I have AAA. I have myself, like my iPhone right here, you know, I have a gas can in the back of my car. So I just need to, like, I have my debit card. I can just go. So again, that's like, there's that contrast of privilege, but to see him being so willing to help me, knowing that he's sitting here, you know, he didn't look at himself and think of himself as less than. He thought, wow, like this woman needs help. How can I help her?
Yeah.
And so it was just interesting, but I was like, okay, well, watch my car. I'm going to go get gas. But when I came back, we just had a really great conversation. He helped put the gas in my car. And he just started to tell me about how, you know, he really meets some really awesome people on the side of the road. But he also told me about how people throw things at him and say, go get a job. And he shared his story about how he, you know, had, like he had, he's disabled. And so he's not able to work, and how he has a family at home. And, but how gracious he was to people, and how he just said, but you know, I understand that, you know, not everybody, you know, is in a good place and, you know, believes in God and all of that. And so his heart was not hardened, even though he experienced such cruelty from the world. And so he taught me so much, like in that moment. And if I didn't allow myself to be interrupted and like, be humble in that moment and get out of the car instead of sit in my car and call AAA and, you know, not talk to him. Like, it was a really cool experience.
That's amazing. How do you feel that impacted your work with your clients?
Yeah, I guess it just kind of made me think more about like, who's like, I don't know, like what things do people go through on a daily basis? Like what struggles do people go through on a daily basis that I don't know about? Even if sometimes, like, if my clients are late, I have grace with that because I don't know, like, what the traffic was like or, you know, if they contemplated coming to session or not, you know, and a lot of times my clients were like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, it's okay. It's okay. You know, like, you're here and it's okay. And we're going to take our time. And, you know, it's just things like that where it helps me just become more kind and gracious because you never know what people are going through on a daily basis.
That's powerful. That's powerful. How does the digging for gold show up with you in your client sessions? Like, how does that philosophy play out when you're working with clients actively?
Yeah, I would say a lot of it is me just asking questions that my clients never really think about. So, in therapy, there is an approach. It's called narrative therapy. So it's really helping people rewrite their stories. So if my narrative is, you know, I am always, you know, second best. Maybe that's my narrative. Then I help you say, well, what is your preferred narrative? What would you like it to be? And they say, I would like to think that I deserve a seat at the table. And so throughout the week, I will say, okay, tell me when you had an example of where you actually felt like you had a seat at the table or when you were invited to the table or where you made a place for yourself at the table. So things like that. But in regards to like how I use gold digging in session, it's a lot like that. It's about maybe my clients will sell themselves short and I will look at it and say, hey, but you know, normally you would have responded this way, but this time it sounded like you took a different approach. Like, you know, normally you freak out at every time that your, you know, significant other makes a comment to you, but it sounded like you only did it twice this week. Like, good job, you know? So we're able to kind of celebrate the small wins. And then they're like, you know what? You're right. Because a lot of times we don't reflect on what we do well. The negativity bias tells us that our brains are naturally wired towards negativity. It just, our brains go towards that. So we have to try extra hard to find the positive or find the good in what we do.
That's powerful.
So that's generally what I do with my clients. And I, you know, it's very much strengths-based therapy. I find what their strengths are and I just go with that. And, you know, I don't really focus on their weaknesses. I focus on what are your strengths? What are you good at? You know?
That's awesome. That's super cool, Gabby. As far as the content, you produce a lot of content. I know you've been speaking a lot. You've been writing this book. What inspired you to be someone who creates content and builds an online brand and following?
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's a long time coming. Growing up, I have always been a performer. I sing and act, and my parents have always tried to push me towards that. But I, and modeling, like my, my parents always wanted me to get into the entertainment industry, but I strayed away from that because my faith is huge for me. And I always said that I don't want to, do something where I feel God is not in it. And I also wanted to always make sure that I was adding value to other people. And, so as gifted as I am in regards to singing and acting and all that, I really wanted to get a degree in marriage and family therapy. So my undergrad is in communication studies and then my master's is marriage and family therapy. But I was like, I really want to be able to help families and relationships and help people, you know, work through their issues. But I feel like in the past couple of years, I feel like there's been like a convergence of all of the talents. Where, you know, going online and speaking and, you know, I do a lot of just creative approaches of how I present the content where it's like, it's not an either or, it's a both and. So I think that that pretty much was a way of me to be able to utilize all my skill sets in a broader platform as well, you know, instead of just kind of one-on-one with just my clients, which I love doing that, being able to be online gives people access that maybe don't live in the same state or same country to be able to, you know, be empowered and get access to information.
I love it. I love it, Gabby. So we're beginning to wrap up now. We want to know, what are the final takeaways, the final things you want our audience to get from this interview?
I would just say that you are the listeners, you are so much more valuable than you give yourself credit. And there's just nobody else in this world like you. And there is a special gift that you have that nobody else will be ever be able to produce like you can. And I think just learning to embrace and accept the season that you're in right now is so important. And stop comparing yourself to other people and other people's stories, because your destiny is not the same as anybody else's, and your, like, what's for you will not pass you. And so every place and every season that you're in is relevant to where you're going, no matter how much it seems like how far you are from where you want to be. It's relevant.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you for tuning in. Right now, we've reached the end of this episode, but this is the start of a whole new beginning. Each and every moment, you have an opportunity to rewrite your story. Right here, right now, decide and commit who you are going to be. Think about how you will use these ideas, wisdom, and inspiration to make the difference in your life. What actions will you take today and every day to step into your greatest possible self? Again, a big shout out to our sponsor, EmployeeEscapePlan.com. If you're committed to learning how to truly harness your abilities and passions to serve the people who are hungry and desperate for what you have to offer, make a great income off of your genius, or if you're ready to get more clients to pay you more money, head over to www.EmployeeEscapePlan.com and let Joe know you were sent by Chris. Did you enjoy this episode? Let your friends know about it. Share the website, BeYourGPS.com, and send me some love on social media. If you want to clarify your vision, uncover blind spots, get more energy, tap into your flow, and take massive action, head over to beyourgps.com/coaching to schedule some time into my calendar. Now, master yourself, create your reality, and make every day your best day ever.